B-Pod Studios.
If you try to tell people how you write a song, you kind of end up fumbling over your own words because you're kind of fooling yourself a lot. It's probably just best to describe, like, I don't know where songs come from. I don't know where any other songwriter gets their songs from either. They just kind of come out of nowhere from the ether. It's strange.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Exciting stuff today here on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Thank you guys so much for checking it out. And I have to admit, I was super excited to talk to Jack White. So much so, I actually drove down to Detroit yesterday and went to Third Man Records and bought a couple albums. We'll talk about that coming up here with Jack and a ton more. And then it's Dorothy Martin, her new record's called Gifts from the Holy Ghost. And that comes out in the spring. We talk about the singles. We talk about her Rock Nation affiliation with Jay-Z. All sorts of stuff as far as Dorothy's world is concerned as they get ready to hop on a tour coming up here in the spring as well. So always great to talk with Dorothy. But first, getting back to Jack White. Like I said, this is just exciting stuff. Detroit icon, Detroit legend, and now just, you know, doing stuff in Nashville as well as Third Man Records is so cool. And I was just thinking about this interview all weekend long. I found out about this last week. And Jack is one of these guys I've never had a chance to meet. I've never had a chance to interview, obviously. And I just jumped at the chance, not knowing anything about, like, you know, I mean, you see interviews here and there, and he seems like a really super nice guy. So I was really excited to talk to him. And what I got was somebody who really genuinely seems to have his finger on the pulse of not only Detroit, but music and a ton more. Just some great stuff with Jack today. Fear of the Dawn is his first record that drops on April 8th. We'll talk about that, as well as Entering Heaven Alive. That comes out on July 22nd. He'll tell me why those records are staggered like that. We talk a little bit about Third Man Records. Just, you know, his overall thoughts of being a Detroit musical icon. And a ton more today with Jack White. As we were connected and we were off and running today on Talkin' Rock. Hey, Jack, thanks for taking the time, man. This is really, really cool. I've been looking forward to talking to you for a long time. I was just talking about this. I went down to Third Man Records yesterday and I bought Boarding House Reach and Lazaretto on vinyl. And I had to figure out how to play Lazaretto on the first side. I couldn't figure that out.
Yeah, you have to. That's a weird one. You have to put the needle on the inside of that record, and it plays towards the outside of the rim. It's pretty bizarre.
Yeah, it's so cool, man. I'm listening to it. I'm like, okay, I got to take this back because it's skipping, but it wasn't. So. But the Supply Chain Issue record, tour, I should say, starts up right here April 8th and 9th at the Masonic. Of course, you're no stranger to the Masonic, having helped those guys out in the past. Talk about the upcoming tour. You're excited to get back on stage after everything that's gone on for the past couple of years?
Oh, absolutely, man. And you know, where else could I start the tour but Detroit? It just worked out perfectly, you know, and Tigers opening day that afternoon. I mean, what else could you ask where the album comes out that day? I mean, so it had to be Detroit.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah, the Tigers opening day. So you'll probably be there, right?
We plan our tour around the baseball schedule of the MLB. So yes, that comes first and foremost before anything important that we're doing.
Yeah, it sounds like you and Geddy Lee would get along great.
We actually do. We write to each other sometimes about baseball. He has an incredible collection too. He's of baseball memorabilia and stuff like that. And just what a nice guy. Such an incredibly nice guy. And I've definitely listened to many Geddy Lee riffs on 101.1 as I was growing up.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Thank you for that. Yeah, so yeah. The two records come out. Now, the first record comes out that day, April 8th, Fear of the Dawn. Yeah. And then the second record comes out on July 22nd, Entering Heaven Alive. So tell me about the records, why you're spreading them out like this, and why the two albums, and what the feel of both records are.
Well, this is the kind of thing that happens when you make two records, and you would love for them to come out on the same day. But you happen to also own a pressing plant in the Cass Corridor, and they tell you there's no possible way we could make that many records and have them all in stores on that same day. This is what happens. These are the perils, Meltdown, of owning your own pressing plant. Changes your life in different ways. So, yeah, so we had to spread it out so we could make room on our presses for all the records, really.
Yeah, and so tell me about the vibe of both albums. So far we've heard Taking Me Back, and then Love Is Selfish. Taking Me Back, by the way, man, what a friggin' ripper. I love that song.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's wild because, Yeah, the Fear of the Dawn album is pretty heavy, pretty heavy, and the Entering Heaven Alive album is pretty mellow. So these songs, as I was writing them all, they sort of just started separating themselves into two groups, and they kind of became two albums of their own. And I just got out of the way, you know, I got out of the way and let it happen. So sometimes that's the only thing you can do, you know. If you try to force things into a box yourself too much, if you're too much on that side of the scale, you can make things. You become indecipherable at times. So I try to stay out of the way of the music.
Yeah, so when you're writing songs in the process you're writing with, do you kind of just let the song kind of, I don't know, for lack of a better term, kind of speak to you and go its own way?
Yeah, I think it's a process that you, if you think you're in control of it, you're kind of fooling yourself or you're kind of being egotistical. You kind of have to let the song write itself and get out of the way of it. There's a lot to be learned over as the years went on. You know, I started to realize that some of these things are not really me writing them. They're really just, you're just an antenna or something like that. If you try to tell people how you write a song, you kind of end up fumbling over your own words because you're kind of fooling yourself a lot. It's probably just best to describe, like, I don't know where songs come from. I don't know where any other songwriter gets their songs from either. They just kind of come out of nowhere from the ether. It's strange.
Yeah. You're like the conduit.
I guess so. You're lucky to be part of the process, I guess, rather than pretend that you're the one who completely invented it or came up with it. It's really, you're just lucky to be part of it.
Now, because there's so much material, does that have something to do with the pandemic, maybe being locked down? Just kind of, you know, were you in a writing mood during all this time?
For a while, I wasn't in 2020. I thought, well, if I write right now, I'm going to get really excited about it. And then we can't put it out or go on tour or anything, and then it's going to sit there for a year, and by the time maybe I'll have moved on to something else. And so I was a little bit scared to even bother. So for the first most of 2020, I just worked on furniture in my upholstery shop I have. So that was where I put all my creativity into design and furniture for a long time then. And finally, sooner or later, I ended up sitting at pianos and finding guitars in my hand, whether I liked it or not. And you realize, oh, there's no stopping this for long. You just end up doing it whether you like it or not.
Yeah. You just can't get away from upholstering furniture, can you?
I guess not, man. I guess not.
It gets in your blood, I'm sure. So, but yeah, I was telling you, I was at Third Man Records yesterday. Your staff down there was awesome. I bought those records, brought my dog in. They said, bring your dog in. I walk in, and one of the things I see, first of all, is some of the Detroit Cobras records. And of course, for those that don't know, maybe outside the area, Rachel Nagy passed away unexpectedly. So talk about that a little bit.
Oh, what an amazing, beautiful, scary person Rachel Nagy was. I mean, she's just so incredible. She punched me in the stomach once at the Magic Bag, and I still don't know why she did it. It hurt, man. And I'll just say that she's just incredible, and she always had something nice to say about the White Stripes, and we played a lot of shows together, and the Detroit Cobras albums were really the soundtrack of the Detroit garage movement. I mean, everyone, you went to someone's house, everybody had that record on of all of our friends, and it's a sad loss to lose her.
Yeah, maybe she was. Is that what happened to Houdini at the Magic Bag? Didn't he get punched unexpectedly too?
At the Magic Stick.
Magic
yeah.
Stick. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. There's too many.
Yeah. There's a whole story there. We need to tie that together sometime. Maybe I'll make a short film of all that and see how it relates to one.
Well, yeah, it's too many magics here in Detroit as far as clubs and venues go. But yeah, that's really cool. I saw that right away. You know, talk about being a Detroit musician. I mean, Eminem's up for the Hall of Fame this year. You know, Kid Rock is, you know, of course, from here. And then, of course, the history of the past with, you know, Nugent and Alice Coopers and all Seegers and the whole thing.
Hmm. Well, it's wonderful. I mean, there's something in the water, as they always say, right? And how is it that one town has had so many different styles of musicians and musical styles, from Motown to what Eminem was doing and the direct Detroit garage rock scene, the Stooges, MC5. I mean, that's so bizarre that all that came from the same city. But I think that's the magic of Detroit, that the roughness of the inner city of Detroit has always been something a little bit magical and strange. And I think that that's when those kind of environments, you know, tend to breed interesting art.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. There's a lot of it that's come out since I've been here the last 26 years. It's so cool to be a part of this, even in a small way, to see some of these guys that have started out since I've been here in 1995.
I was wondering when you started, because I remember hearing your name back in the 90s too. I thought that's maybe when you started with Riff. So yeah, it's wild because it's also too, like the things that we considered, you know, classic rock, you know, in the 90s, they were only, some of that stuff was only 20 years old, you know. It wasn't that old. It would be like right now saying, you know, something that I put out, you know, 2003 or something is classic. It's a strange scenario that, and how some of those things are still, you see a teenager now listening to something that's considered classic. I was like, wow, I listened to this album when I was a teenager, and it was, we thought it was ancient then, you know. It's great that it's still alive and influencing another generation. Some of these songs are so powerful, you can't stop them, you know.
Now, speaking of 20 years ago, you're going to be eligible for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in a couple years. I mean, does that thought ever cross your mind, or just something you just don't think about?
I don't know. Where is that, in Cleveland or something?
Yeah, I've driven by it a few times, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't really thought about that. I mean, you know, all awards are political, really. So it's hard to really grasp, you know, any real thought about what they actually mean. You know, maybe it should be called the Music Museum instead.
You know what? We agree on that 100%. So I mean, you know, Dolly Parton's up this year. You've worked a lot with Loretta Lynn in the past. You think she should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Dolly Parton, huge rock and roller.
Yeah, she is a huge rock and roller, but I don't know. She's hosting the Country Music Awards coming up here. So
Saint Dolly should be her name too. She's just, you know, she's just such a saint. Like she does nothing but good in the world. It's just amazing. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, a couple of final things here for you. You know, the Seven Nation Army has just taken on a life of its own as far as, you know, at stadiums, and you hear it all over the place. Talk about like how that started and what your thoughts are about hearing your song in these stadiums all over the place.
Well, the one thing that's funny is people, how often people think it for some reason that I don't like that, or that it, oh, Jack must hate this, or kind of something like that. I hear that. I've been hearing that for 20 years now, or whatever it's been, 15 years or something. I can't remember what year that came out, but the, why would I, as a songwriter, why would I be bothered that this was happening? Are you out of your mind? It's the ultimate thing that could ever happen. If you were a part of this process of writing a song, something about that became folk music. I mean, maybe it's like a melody that's just never got put down on paper exactly in that fashion. You know, there's similar things, similar blues modes over the years that floated around that, but for some reason that struck a chord with people, not just in one country, but chanting it worldwide. That's just bizarre to me. It's just absolutely bizarre. So of course it brings me joy every single time.
Yeah, I mean, did you ever think you'd find success like this in your life? This is really amazing what you've done.
I think back to when we recorded the Seven Nation Army in London, and we thought nothing of it at the time. It was just another track on the record that we were recording. Nobody stopped and said, oh my God, that's the single, you know, or that's a powerful thing. And everyone just thought, okay, you know. And I actually, people talked more about other tracks on the record and didn't even mention that thing to me. Both labels didn't want to put it out as the first single. I mean, that shows you people never really know, you know, what power certain songs have or what longevity certain things have. And we see things, yeah, like we were talking about classic music or classic rock and roll and what defines that. It's impossible to tell what will stand the test of time. You just never know.
Yeah. Well, Matt's going to cut me off here, but Jack, it's been an honor and a privilege to talk to you. Fear of the Dawn comes out April 8th evening. Entering Heaven Alive, I'm sorry, July 22nd. Of course, you're opening up your tour here, the Supply Chain Issue Tour at the Masonic in Detroit on April 8th and 9th. And Jack, can't wait to hear the new music. Thank you so much for everything you've done, and thanks for your time today.
Thank you, sir, and thanks to the Riff for playing my music all over the years and supporting Detroit music in general. I really appreciate that. Thanks. You guys do a great job.
Man, I'll tell you what. I was really fired up to talk to Jack. He didn't disappoint. Just a super talent and obviously a really nice guy. Big sports fan as well. I wish I could have talked to him about sports a little bit more. But, yeah, I mean, obviously I should have known that him and Geddy Lee are friends. It's like two peas in a pod right there. Two musical geniuses and just baseball fanatics. But really cool to talk to Jack. Like I said, the records drop on different days. April 8th, Fear of the Dawn. Then Evie, you know, I keep reading this wrong because it's in my own handwriting. Entering Heaven Alive. I should have typed all this stuff out. That comes out on July 22nd. So really looking forward to hearing both those records. Like he said, one's, you know, Fear of the Dawn's heavier, and Entering Heaven Alive is lighter. So looking forward to checking those out coming up later on this year.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Speaking of records, Gifts from the Holy Ghost, that's Dorothy's upcoming album. That drops later on in the spring. No date as far as that's concerned yet. And she's got a tour coming up and a lot of things. And so Dorothy's kind of like a friend of mine, and I connected with her around noon my time, 9 o'clock her time. So I guess we we rattle her cage in the morning here on Talkin' Rock.
Good morning, Meltdown.
My God, we were just talking before we started about all the stuff I did. Now, you like to get up in the morning and run. Now, see, I don't like to run. I play hockey, and during the summertime, you know, for about 6 months out of the year, I ride a bicycle. So I'll put like 1,000 miles on my bicycle. But you're a runner, huh?
I'm a runner right now, for sure. It's crazy because I used to be a party animal, and now I get up at like 6 a.m. in the morning before it's light out, have my coffee, and I go for a run. I'm trying to train my body for tour.
Yeah. What was that moment when you shut the switch off from party animal to, you know, I got to change things around? Was there a specific moment?
Oh my gosh. Well, there was many. There was a few. You know, I'm pretty open about my journey in recovery. And for me, like, I put it out there, I'm a recovering alcoholic, and I'm allergic to alcohol. If I take one drink, I don't have an off switch,
right?
Which is scary because, like, you just drink to black out. And I know that there's probably a lot of people out there that struggle with this and maybe are on the fence. And, you know, I kept saying to myself, I'm never drinking again. And I meant it, but I just couldn't stop. And so that craving would take over my mind and body. And that's when I knew, I'm like, I think alcoholism, there's more to it than just your stereotypical, like, you know, maybe bum on the street with a bottle in a bag. You know, it was, oh, I have an allergy to alcohol. I can't actually safely drink it.
Yeah.
And knowing that, I kept drinking for a while, but it gets worse. Don't worry.
Yeah. You know, there are some people, like you say, that I know that once that switch goes on, and they might only do it every once in a while, like every few months or whatever, but once that switch is on, it doesn't shut off.
Yeah, you're just like kind of obsessing about it, and you want the relief that the drink brings you, but it's one is too much or never enough. I don't know. There's some cliche saying, but it's true, because you can never put the fire out. Like, when you wake up the dragon, you cannot quench the thirst. It's crazy. It's a crazy, weird disease to live with, but I'm also really grateful for it because I do a 12-step program, and it's connected me to so many amazing people, and it's opened up my eyes to living in a spiritual way that's a lot more satisfying and deep than I was living before when I was asleep.
Now, it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me like over the last 2 or 3 years, you've made a vast change in your life. Am I seeing that right?
Yeah, there's been many changes. There's been many dark seasons. There's been a lot of spiritual awakening, just awakening in general, changing the way I live my life, really trusting my intuition. I know we were talking about this, and I just made this album, Gifts from the Holy Ghost, completely based on intuition and how I felt, and I just trusted the process, and I didn't have like too many cooks in the kitchen or this manager giving me, you know, their advice or what they think I should be, or, you know, too many people pulling me in different directions. I kind of just steered the ship towards my destination. And I kind of, the way I went about this album, you know, I believe that no human life is without purpose and that everyone is good enough. And so I created this album with the intention that it would be a beacon of hope in the darkness for these people, for everybody. You know, there's so much negative messaging out there. I wanted to sort of pierce through that and let people know that even if it seems like what they're experiencing is painful and hopeless, that it's actually just a season and it's an opportunity to grow as a human being, to gain deeper insight. And honestly, I think it takes a dark season and pain sometimes to wake us up. And so this doesn't last forever. And then when you emerge out the other side, beautiful stuff happens. Like you write an album with these amazing messages. I just, you know, it was really inspired and I got to work with so many amazing people. I'm just like kind of in shock, to be honest, but I'm really excited to share it with everybody. And I'm so grateful to you for supporting it.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, we'll talk about some of the guests coming up here in just a bit. But I just wanted to tell people that you were on the show, I don't know, year and a half ago, whatever it was. And you just out of the blue told me this amazing story about your tech ODing on the bus. Said you just, you know, through divine intervention, you believe that that he's still around. And did that incident really play into the making of this album?
Oh, 100%. It's funny because I did tell you that story and it was awesome to share that with you. And now here we are full circle and I finished the record. That was the day that I know we have the interview up somewhere and people can go back and listen to it. But yeah, long story short, my guitar tech overdosed on our tour bus on heroin and died and was revived. And I was kind of observing what was happening and I felt this presence there, and I intuitively, you know, kind of had this message to pray over him as the paramedics were working on him. And it was almost like I was being shown this experience for a greater purpose, and I'm sure more will be revealed. But I definitely went from not being sure about, you know, is there a higher power, is there a God or whatever. And listen, this is not about religion, and I don't want to get preachy or turn anyone off. I used to just not really have a concept of a higher power. And even when I was you know, doing my 12-step program, in the beginning attempts to get sober, they say you need, you know, a God of your own understanding, a higher power, which could, if you're an atheist, could also mean the group conscience, like the power of other recovering alcoholics around you that are, you know, helping guide the way. But anyways, that experience shifted everything for me. And I was like, this is real. This is 100% real. I don't care what anyone says. You can't change my mind. I had this very, very tangible, real experience. And then I feel like that was the seed planted for gifts from the Holy Ghost. And here we are.
Yeah, that was one of the most incredible stories that a musician's ever told me. And, you know, obviously you went a lot deeper in that. I'll try to link that up on the description of the show to the original interview. But that was amazing. And so now, am I allowed to talk about the other songs you sent me?
Oh, sure. Yeah, let's get into the song.
Okay, so you sent me a couple more songs. Obviously, Rest in Peace is out. But Black Sheep and Beautiful Life. And the thing that strikes me about these songs, and this is probably obvious or maybe even a stupid comment, but it's all these songs seem somewhat autobiographical. And I guess since you write them and stuff, you know, they're your lived experiences. But talk about them.
You know, Rest in Peace was written by Scott Stevens and the Four Horsemen for me. Actually, I took two songs on this record that I didn't write any lyrics for, and it's because they were so good and I felt a connection with them. So that was the first thing. I feel like Scott took all the words right out of my mouth, and I was able to just embody that and perform it. And Black Sheep, I wrote with, again, Scott Stevens and the Four Horsemen. I did a little bit of lyrical contribution, but the bones of the song really were already there because these guys are just incredible writers and incredible musicians. And Scott is an incredible producer as well. And we wrote that with the intention of writing a fan song for the rock and roll family, just something that's very unifying. And the lyrics say, we're blood, we are family, because we are. And you go to a rock concert, there's this sense of unity, and it's organic and it's raw and it's sometimes animalistic. And we wanted to tap into that and give them a really good party song that's about our, you know, about our genre and about our family as a rock family. And then A Beautiful Life, I wrote that was very autobiographical. That was very much inspired by the bus incident. That was inspired by my recovery. That was inspired by even feeling suicidal at one point. And what is my purpose in life and the bigger picture? And the message I'm getting is that I have a purpose. And that's why, in the lyric, heaven said that it wasn't my time. We found a way for you to help. I'm here to be in service to God and to humanity. That's why I truly believe I'm here. And I do it through the vehicle of music. And so I'm trying to live this life where I provide hope and inspiration through music, because that's the talent I've been given and cultivated. And I'm just so grateful. I wrote that with Jason Hook. I went to Vegas. He had this killer riff, and it's one of those songs that just happened in 10 minutes where the lyrics, I call it like a cosmic download. I don't know what happened. It's also part of me, so it's a little of my subconscious, but then it's almost like, I swear an angel is whispering the lyrics into my ear and I'm writing it down. I know that sounds crazy. It probably is, but it's just a beautiful thing to experience. And it's one of my favorite songs on the record. And my favorite lyric on the record is "Don't let the demons get you down."
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's amazing. Like I've never written a song, but I talk to artists all the time where songs just like, they just kind of flood into your psyche or something. They just come out your brain or out your mouth or whatever. And that sounds like that's what happened.
Yeah, I feel like I'm a channel or something. It's very bizarre. It's magical. It's beautiful. I can't explain how it works. That's why I believe in something bigger.
Yeah. Well, like you said, you've witnessed something that would lead you to believe that.
Yeah. I realize not everybody has those experiences, and I don't know why, but, you know, I am very grateful for it, and it's a really good story.
So you just mentioned Jason Hook, and you were talking about just a few minutes ago, you worked with a lot of different people on this album. So talk about some of the guys that you've worked with.
It's crazy. I feel like I've somehow magically assembled the dream team. We got Keith Wallen from Breaking Benjamin. I wrote a bunch of songs with him. I'm planning on writing with him some more. And Scott Stevens, the Four Horsemen, Trevor Lukather, Jason Hook, Chris Traynor from Bush. I worked a little bit with Joel Hamilton, who produced some of the stuff at Studio G in Brooklyn. And then Chris Lord-Alge and Phil X kind of took over and brought it home. And he mixed it and he added some amazing production or reimagined some of the songs as well, because we wanted to get it, you know, we wanted to get it right and bring the whole picture together. Who else am I? I'm probably forgetting somebody, and I don't want to do that because everyone was so... Audra May... in Nashville, incredible songwriter. I got to put some of her songs on the record. She's a very beautiful lyricist and has an amazing voice. And if I'm forgetting anyone right now, it's probably because I've just had too much coffee today. But it's pretty wild how I got all these people that I look up to converge on this album.
Was there anybody you asked that couldn't for whatever reason?
I'm sure there was. But they probably had their reasons, and that's totally fine.
Yeah.
I feel like it's meant to be, will be. It's all good, you know?
Yeah. No, the record sounds killer, what I've heard so far, and I saw it described as one of this year's most fun rock records. And I'll tell you what, the three songs I've heard are all upbeat, just, you know, like a train going down the track.
Oh, that's exactly what I wanted. I wanted it to be fun. And the shows, I have just a feeling they're just going to be fun, positive, unifying. I mean, and maybe like an outlet for relief for a lot of people. So we're really looking forward to our headlining U.S. tour this March. So come on out.
So have you played on stage, or when was the last time you played on stage?
We did a few of those Danny Wimmer festivals and stuff last year, which were amazing. We played Welcome to Rockville in Florida. It was like 30,000, 40,000 people. Probably the biggest show we've played to date, and it was just so much fun. They were nuts. The fans were nuts. I mean, I don't know what happened. One of the bands pulled off the bill, and they bumped us to like a later primetime slot, and I'm just like, you know, thank you. I don't know how this happened, but it worked out really well for our benefit.
So did you go from being locked down to playing in front of 30,000 people? Is that how it works?
I mean, yes and no. I made this record during lockdown and flew to New York and lived in a hotel for a month and, you know, would go back and forth to LA and Nashville and Vegas. I traveled all around. I was, you know, obviously safe about it, but I just had this sense of purpose and urgency that I had to make this record. And, you know, if I stay locked down in my house, I'm going to go insane and I'm probably going to drink. And actually I did. I ended up, after making the first half of the record, I relapsed and went to a rehab in Nashville, where apparently Johnny Cash had gone to rehab. And, I wrote a song out there called Pray With Me. And, it was really beautiful. I met a lot of wonderful sober women, and, I went a little stir crazy. I don't know. Rehab's not for me. I just work the program and take it a day at a time and try to live my best life and be of service to people. And that kind of keeps my cup full, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I didn't realize. I talked to a lot of guys, you know, that obviously life is a struggle sometimes. And especially, I mean, you know, no one's really been locked down in my whole life. I mean, you know, and that could have been a triggering mechanism, huh?
Oh, yeah, it certainly is. It felt very dark and it felt confusing. And I think it was very triggering for a lot of people. This was an unprecedented thing. It's suspicious. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, division in our country. And my intention is to try to be an avenue to heal some of that in some way, shape, or form. And I feel like music just in general does that. It just brings people together. So there's that. And I'm very grateful for that. But the thing that I feel like people don't talk about, and everyone's kind of got like pandemic fatigue and they're sick of talking about it. And I don't blame them, is the mental health implications that the lockdowns had with, the skyrocketing suicides, overdoses, relapses, and especially on our kids, you know, our teenagers and our youth, and how much screen time they're engaging in. So I think it's really important to keep making music and to realize you're on a platform, you have a microphone, you should say something that will help someone when they hear it. And so here I am. That's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, that's well said, by the way. And it seems like it almost... Like, I've always liked you, obviously. We've been friends for a long time, but it almost seems like you're a completely different person than the one I met several years ago.
I think that might be accurate, and I also feel like I've lived 3 or 4 different lifetimes in one lifetime, and, like, sometimes my body just hurts, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes, and I'm sure you can relate. I feel like we go through these seasons, and I feel like I've lived 3 or 4 lives, and I am definitely not the same person as I was years ago, and neither are you. We're always just kind of on this, I say we're, spirits on a human journey, and this is just the vehicle I'm driving.
Yeah. So are you in Los Angeles right now?
I'm a little bit south of LA, but I'm there quite often.
Okay. Cause I saw that the mayor of Los Angeles, apparently when he takes pictures with people, he takes his mask off, then he holds his breath. Now, if we would have known this information a long time ago, we could have been out of this
so
pandemic,
good.
Right?
Can't make this up. Yeah.
Like,
I don't know what to say about that other than
I mean, this pandemic could have been finished if we all would have just stopped breathing for a little while. That's the way I look at it.
Oh, you know. Well, I think it's, I don't know. I'm just ready to party with some energy drinks and play a rock show. That's all I know. I'm ready to get out there and rock and roll.
So the lockdown thing, we're going into 2 years now for the pandemic and whatnot, and bands have dropped records and stuff like that. Have you been keeping up on some of the bands and do you ever listen to some of the new music that's coming out and kind of, I don't know, kind of just like not rank yourself against it, but just kind of put your own music against what's going on right now?
I'd be lying if I said I didn't. And I think Papa Roach just dropped a song that I really liked. When I listen to music, I go, how's this, you know, does it feel good? I don't care what the band is. I don't care what people think about it. It's like, does it make me feel good? I love Disturbed, love Breaking Benjamin, love, you know, and then also I just listened to some of the Pretty Reckless album and sounds killer, you know? So how does it make me feel? And yeah, of course, sometimes I listen to mixes, but I am just so lucky to have Chris Lord-Alge in my corner. I mean, the guy is a legend, a brilliant mixer. And he brought Phil X on board, who sang a bunch of our background vocals and laid down some really great guitar. I just think that this is a really strong record. And I finally got to kind of drive the project my way, without any sort of, sure, there were obstacles, but I was just like, I have a vision and we're going to do this now. And I just did it.
Well, the reason I brought that question up was because one of my favorite records from last year was the Pretty Reckless album. And so far, what I've heard from this reminds me of that Pretty Reckless album. And not just because, you know, the female thing, but they're a straight ahead rock band. You're a straight ahead rock band. It's got kind of the same kind of vibe to it as well.
For sure, we went more hard rock on this album. So, like, my first record was actually not done by rock producers. But the one of the producers really liked Black Sabbath and played guitar, so that was the foundation we built that off of. Second album, I partnered with Linda Perry, and she had a really strong vision, so I was willing to take a risk and a little deviation from what I typically do. And then the third record, Gifts from the Holy Ghost, I came back and I wanted to like really lean into what I like and what makes me feel powerful and victorious. And so that was, you know, rock with heavier guitars, but obviously with the songwriting in mind, even almost, you know, catchy pop hooks. And not that it's pop, it's just that like I want them to sing along to this, and I want them to remember the songs and to be able to like sing them in their head and just get, it's catchy. I want it to be as catchy as possible. So I really love songwriting and writing lyrics. I had an especially fun time with Trevor Lukather. There's a song called Hurricane, which I feel it could be a pop song, but his guitars are so nasty and cool. And his melodic solos are so beautiful. We did a Touched by Fire together. And we did another song called Top of the World, which I just think everyone's going to hopefully enjoy this whole record. I didn't want any nonsense on there. I didn't want any fat, like trim the fat, 10 strong, good songs. That's all I wanted.
Yeah. And Trevor, that's Steve's son, right?
Yeah, a good friend of mine, really killer guitar player, good producer, and just a great guy.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, from what I've heard from this record so far and the other tracks that you guys sent me, it is friggin' killer. And you know what a vinyl guy I am, so of course I got to get this on vinyl if it comes out in the... Because sometimes these vinyl records are being pushed back.
How about we send you a vinyl, and actually I have to pick the packaging today, so it's good timing. We'll send you a vinyl, how about CD, and we're doing cassettes.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah. Wow, that's pretty cool. You're really going old school with all this stuff. Are you a vinyl person yourself?
Yeah, I am. I had, you know, I grew up with my dad's collection. He had, like, the original Thriller from, right. I don't know, was it 70s, late 70s? I mean, they were falling apart. They were so old, you know. And I had them, and then they sat in storage for a while. I was moving around L.A. and touring a lot. And I said, you know, I'm not really, like, using these, so I gave them to a friend to hold on to with my record player. So they're safe and they're being cared for and loved by someone that appreciates it. And I'm always traveling and running around, and vinyl's heavy, so I understand. But it's cool to hold a tangible, real product.
No doubt.
I am a baby. I love CDs and jewel cases, and you pull out the pamphlet, you pull out like the booklet with the lyrics. So we made that for this record. And I don't know. I love CDs. I still have a CD player in my car.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah, and so this record drops in the spring on Rock Nation, and that's with Jay-Z. And what's he like?
Oh, he's cool, man. He's cool. I met him a couple times, and he's very tall and always very well-dressed. And I had a funny interaction. I went to a Rock Nation Grammy brunch one year in this like yellow dress, and him and P. Diddy, who I will forever call Puff Daddy, his 90s, were wearing matching three-piece burgundy suits, and he looks at me and he goes, "You didn't get the memo?" Because I was clashing so badly with them, and I just was like, wow, Jay-Z just trolled me.
How much inspiration does a guy like that give you? And have you seen the documentary Get Back as the Beatles are writing those songs? Does that inspire you at all?
I haven't seen that documentary. I should definitely check that out. It's inspiring to have someone like that believe in you and come up to you and say you're making music that's making a difference, and that's really beautiful. And I'm never going to forget that moment.
Yeah. Well, Dorothy, Gifts from the Holy Ghost comes out in the spring, and we'll definitely keep our ears peeled for that. We'll see you right here in Detroit. And it's always great to catch up and talk with you, and thanks so much for calling in.
For sure. I think we'll be at St. Andrew's Hall, and I'd love to see you there. So just hit me up, and we'll get together.
Another two for the price of one today on Talkin' Rock. Dorothy and Jack White, both with new music coming out this year, both with big tours coming out this year as well. So lots of stuff starting to percolate as we start to put this pandemic behind. I'm going to knock on wood or whatever is this thing is made of and hope for the best. And, man, I'll tell you what, hopefully this summer things start to really get back to normal with all sorts of tours lined up, stadium tours and such. So Anyways, thank you guys so much for checking out the podcast. I urge you to subscribe and follow and hit me up on my socials as well, at MeltdownWRIF. Why? Because later on this week, I'm talking to Slash, and I've got the hooks in the water for some other big-name artists as well. So you don't want to miss a moment. You don't want to miss an episode. Go back and check out some of the past episodes if this is your first time listening to the podcast. And, you know, hit me up on the socials as well. Let me know that you're out there listening. I do appreciate that. In the meantime, we'll do it up again very soon. Thank you so much for checking out Talkin' Rock.
Thank you for listening to Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. You can help this podcast grow by giving it a 5-star rating and writing a review on Apple and iTunes. Plus, feel free to subscribe and share it with your friends. Until next time, thanks for listening to Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.